support comes from Tub Cove. With over 49 years of remodeling bathrooms, Tub Cove can help simplify the process, offering tub and shower replacements and full bathroom remodels. Local and family-owned, with a showroom in Redmond. Designs and information at tubcove.com.
You're listening to Soundside. I'm Libby Denkman. Let's talk about what to do with kids who need more challenging material in the classroom. Seattle Public Schools is phasing out its highly capable cohort model, where advanced learners go to a handful of elementary, middle, and high schools in the district with curriculum that is 1 or 2 years ahead of their grade, depending on the subject. Instead, starting next school year, the district's replacement, called the Highly Capable Neighborhood Model, will be available at every school. Under this whole classroom approach, teachers will be tasked with personalizing lesson plans for individual students. Seattle Public Schools says that the current model, where kids are separated, raises equity issues because it serves a larger share of white and Asian students than the general student population. The percentage of Latino and Black students in the program has grown since the district started universal testing, but it still lags behind district demographics as a whole. But many HCC parents are worried about the loss of these highly capable schools. We invited your feedback on the subject, and yep, we got some calls.
I wish that they would continue the program as it is.
Individualization sounds great, but class sizes are simply too large, and teachers do not have the resources to do this. It puts an awful lot of burden on them.
As the public schools did during COVID in not offering school because it couldn't be equitable, I think that it's a very similar thought pattern in saying we aren't going to offer the highly capable program because we can't get it to be equitable. I think it can and has to be equitable because there are students, white students, students of color, who greatly benefit from the program.
Getting rid of this program is driving families out of our public school system during a budget crisis. That takes resources away from all students in our district and makes the entire district weaker.
The truth is, there's a lot of room between maintaining the system as it is with standalone cohort programs and doing nothing. Seattle Public Schools wants us to do nothing.
We did ask Seattle Public Schools to come on the show to talk about how the new highly capable neighborhood model will work and to address parents' concerns. The district couldn't make scheduling work for today's program, but says that they are working on setting up an interview for next week. Claire Bryan is a staff reporter at the Seattle Times who recently reported on the closure of the highly capable cohort program. Her article on the subject has kicked off a new round of discussion about why Seattle Schools is making the change and how gifted education should be handled. Claire says HCC parents often seek out the program because their kids are struggling in mainstream classrooms.
Parents that have kids that go to these schools now really love that the curriculum is at a faster pace. It's more individualized to what their student can really handle. And oftentimes these students can also be students with ADHD or autism or some other type of behavioral problem or, you know, just quirk that they bring into the classroom. And so parents can feel that these cohort program schools are smaller and their teacher really knows how to cater to their learning style. And they love that their kid finds community with other kids that learn like them.
So why is the Seattle School District phasing out the highly capable cohort system?
So it's been documented for decades that the program is inequitable and tends to serve mostly white students and Asian students. And it's been an issue for all gifted ed programs across the country, because when you think about it, questions about what is intelligence, how do you measure that? How do you test that? Those are really tricky questions. So the district feels strongly, and they developed a task force with community members that also felt this way, that it is time to make a really significant change, even though over the years they've made a lot of changes to the program. The other reason why they're choosing to get rid of these cohort schools is because their math department found that some students were not actually doing as well in the 2-year advanced curriculum setup as they thought. So some students were actually not having a real conceptual understanding of the material, but having a more surface level or procedural, able to memorize kind of level of learning. And the district hopes that by getting rid of the blanket 2-year advanced curriculum and intermixing these highly capable students into the regular classroom, it gives the teacher an opportunity to individualize the learning for every high cap student. So maybe that student needs 1 year and a half advanced curriculum, but not quite the 2 years. So the district is hopeful that by actually getting rid of these schools and intermixing the students into the classroom, they'll actually be able to get a more specific learning that they really need and not get lost in the really speedy, fast 2 year advanced curriculum.
So the district is saying, listen, this is inequitable. We're just mainly serving white and Asian students here with the cohort model that separates them from mainstream classrooms. And also that the math understanding wasn't there. There was an actual substantive, you know, issue with the way that some kids were maybe not learning as fully or as deeply the 2 year advanced math curriculum as was expected in the highly capable cohort model. Now, as you say, there is this shift that's going to happen over the course of a few years where you're going to have the highly capable kids mixed into regular classrooms or mainstream classrooms. And teachers will be doing what here, Claire? Like, they will be individually tailoring lesson plans to what each kid needs?
Yes. So it's a really heavy lift, especially, I think, for us as outsiders to imagine teachers doing this.
It sounds like a lot of work. And if I know teachers, I know that they are busy.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, differentiation in a classroom is sort of seen as the most sophisticated style of teaching. Basically, these teachers are going to have, and some teachers, as I highlight in the story, like at View Ridge Elementary, are already doing this. Teachers are going to have to mix in general education students, special education students, highly capable students, lots of different types of students in one room. I got the opportunity to speak to some educators about this, which was really interesting because definitely there were some who felt like they are already stretched so thin. They're not necessarily getting extra resources from the district. They are getting professional development and training about how to do this differentiation in classrooms, but they're not necessarily getting extra adults in the room to help out with this. So some do really feel nervous about this and feel like it's not the best option or it's not going to set them up to succeed, particularly in math, because math can be so, it's so necessary with math to individualize the learning. But what's happening at a school like View Ridge Elementary is some of the teachers really welcome the challenge. They see it as something that, you know, they have to be very creative. You have to be very creative with teaching every day, no matter what. And here's another opportunity to do that. And it's also an opportunity to really get to know your students well and know exactly where they're at every day, how to teach to them, and not just be able to plug in a lesson plan and hope that everyone gets it. It really demands a lot from the teacher, but some teachers see that as a good thing. You should know your students that well. You should be able to cater exactly to them. Some of these teachers, they work on finding multiple entry points into a lesson with these students. So they might go over something in the morning and the faster-paced learner picks up on it right away. And the slower-paced learner doesn't, but then they go back to it in the afternoon. And then they have an exercise where they pair up a slower-paced learner with a faster-paced learner. And in the afternoon, that's when the other slower-paced learner really gets it, because that faster-paced learner has had the opportunity to sort of teach and pair up with the lower-paced learner. And that's another thing that's really great for students who are highly capable. If they have an opportunity to teach something that they just learned, we know that that's really good for reinforcing learning.
Hmm.
Another thing I saw at View Ridge Elementary was in a first grade classroom, a teacher was doing reading rotations. So that he had projected on the board a different schedule of how the class was going to work. And in the front of the classroom, he had about seven general education students reading a book out loud with him. And you could see in the back corner, there was the advanced learners that were reading silently to themselves on their iPads. There was also a couple of students who were special ed students who had paraeducators that were working one-on-one with them at a desk. So there was lots of examples of how teachers are able to do this. And it was really interesting to see. But I think everyone is really skeptical that the teachers are all going to be able to pull this off and recognize that it's challenging. And there's a lot of experts you know, across the country that have studied this for a long time that are really kind of holding their breath to see if this is actually possible. They think that it could be a great thing in theory if teachers are able to do it, if they have the bandwidth to do it. But I think people are pretty nervous that this is going to be possible.
Yeah, that kind of leads into my next question. Has this been done anywhere else?
So it has been done in other places, but to say that it's been done really successfully, kind of no, not really. San Francisco gave this a shot, especially with their math department. A lot of districts are interested in this model. There's a big trend towards wanting to be more equitable and wanting to do this whole classroom differentiation model. But a lot of the researchers I've talked to, they feel like there's really not enough evidence that there's particularly a district that's pulling this off successfully.
We talked about the equity issues earlier in our conversation, Claire. So the issue of how teachers are possibly going to manage building these individualized lesson plans for each student is one thing. But the other is that currently the cohort model where kids are split off in, you know, separate schools in the highly capable programs are serving a disproportionate number of white and Asian students. How would that be different if they're mainstreaming in the regular classroom? I mean, you still have the issue of screening for the highly capable programs and who gets to have these individualized lesson plans. How is the district going to address equity there?
Yeah, so universal screening is a big topic that comes up when it comes to equity. And the district has actually already made great strides in this. They changed how they're universally screening students about 3 years ago, and they're going to continue to do that.
And I should say, because this has been an issue like where a wealthier family could pay to have their kid individually tested in a way that, you know, a lower income person would not be able to have that extra outside testing available to get their kid into a highly capable program, right?
Right, exactly. A lot of times, literally, they don't have the money to get their student tested, or maybe just a family that's not in the know as much or doesn't, you know, doesn't have friends in the community or something like that. A lot of times families could get left out of that option.
Claire, is there anything else that you want to add to this? I mean, I kind of come back to the idea that parents that I've heard from say, why wasn't there more effort put in screening and supporting and the pipeline for Black and Latino students, for example, to raise their representation in the highly capable cohort model? Any idea how the district would respond to that?
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. The district, the way that they changed their screening is before they were just testing cognitive ability, and now they're testing cognitive ability, performance in classroom, so a student's grade and assignments, participation in classroom, what a teacher says about how this kid learns, and even outside of school, if the student has a interest or a talent or a creative outlet where they're really thriving, if a parent can demonstrate to the school, hey, this is what my kid is interested in, and this is how they're excelling at a quick rate, even something like that can get them to get this designation. So the district really has expansively changed how they are testing. It's really not just a traditional test of cognitive abilities anymore. And I do think that has helped. We do see at elementary school like Decatur, we do see the demographics changing. They just are changing still kind of slowly.
That's Seattle Times staff reporter Claire Bryan, who's covering the phasing out of Seattle Public Schools' highly capable cohort schools and what comes next. You're listening to Soundside on KUOW. I'm Libby Denkman. As you just heard from Claire, some Seattle teachers say they welcome the challenge of getting creative and working on differentiated lesson plans for each student in their classrooms. Now, no one is defending the lower representation of Black and Latino students in the highly capable cohort schools. That's recognized as a problem. But the correct way to address that lack of diversity has become a divisive issue. In a 2019 book, author and activist Azure Savage wrote about their experience feeling isolated and under scrutiny as one of the only Black students in mostly white honors classes in Seattle public schools, which have since been sunsetted. Savage argued that the tracking model separating highly capable students into special classes was harmful to Black and brown kids and should be ended. Others argue that the district has been half-hearted in its efforts to diversify the highly capable cohorts and is prematurely abandoning the program to the detriment of students who need to be challenged in math and reading and can't afford alternatives. Jay Lay is a Seattle Public Schools parent and is on the board of the Cascadia Elementary PTA, a highly capable cohort school. She says she has personal experience with what public school gifted programs can offer.
When I was in that program, I was one of the free and reduced lunch kids. My parents were below the poverty line. They worked multiple jobs, never had time to care about my actual education within the Seattle Public Schools. If it weren't for the program and the teachers who encouraged me to take the next step, I don't think I would be where I am today. So I want to fight for all the kids who are like me, who will lose the opportunity to go to this wonderful program within the public school if they cancel this program. The kids who have money will always have what they need. It's the kids who don't have money that are going to be left with nothing.
Jay Lay recently co-wrote an op-ed for the Seattle Times titled "Dismantling Highly Capable Cohorts Will Hurt All Students." Jay says she decided to send her son to Cascadia because he was working ahead of grade level and she didn't see enough support offered at his local elementary. Now, with the district moving to bring highly capable cohort students back to mainstream classrooms, she questions whether that support will materialize under the neighborhood model.
Seattle Public Schools have talked about using a neighborhood delivery model. And in doing so, if you look on the Seattle Public School website, they have broken down a timeline of implementing these changes. And one of the things that they highlight is that there is a pilot program. There is no pilot program. I spoke to several families who are in those schools, some whose kids are highly capable and chose to stay at the neighborhood school for various reasons, and others who have chosen to leave those schools and come to Cascadia. But the answer from all these parents are the same. What pilot program? The district office is telling us there is a neighborhood model. I think most of the parents are saying, what is it? Where is it? How is it measurable? Can you show us that it's quantifiably a good replacement for the cohort model?
If you had more concrete planning from the district available about what the classroom model would look like and more assurances about how teachers would be trained to individualize lesson plans for advanced learners, would that give you more confidence in this transition? How would you feel?
I would definitely want to listen to the district and hear what they have to say if there is a plan. But the reality, Libby, is that it's not just about individual learning plans or guidance in the classrooms. The fact of the matter is Seattle Public Schools is facing a huge budget deficit. So they're applying across the board cuts in all schools in Seattle Public School. So we're looking at funding shortfalls. At the same time, they're talking about cutting programs, and they have already eliminated almost all of the neighborhood advanced learning options. So, you know, walk to math that was available, it was easy to implement. Kids literally would walk to their appropriate math level, take the class, and then return to their grade level class for the other subject matters. Spectrum program, gone. There is no more Spectrum. So I think a lot of parents are very skeptical. Why are you saying you're going to do a neighborhood model when you've eliminated the neighborhood options that used to exist?
So anecdotally, what do you hear from parents when it comes to their plans? If these cohort schools are phased out, which is the current plan from Seattle Public Schools, what do you hear from other parents in terms of what they plan to do?
Well, within the past 2 years, after there's been announcement about sunsetting the cohort model, many of the parents who graduate from the cohort opt to leave the district. Many of them go to private schools and some have moved to the east side. And I have heard from several friends that they do plan to move if the program is sunsetted, because what happens is that they actually have multiple kids at different schools. So their younger kids are not eligible to go to Cascadia should they qualify.
Is there anything else that you want to add here about what you'd like to see from the district in terms of communication, in terms of planning for the way that it will be serving highly capable students going forward?
I think there is a lot of things that the district can do to build trust and partnership with families, not just with HC families, but with Seattle Public School families in general. And that is, number one, they need to clearly communicate what their goals are. So, for example, if they're trying to improve equity with the cohort program, what that means is that they need to change their policies of admitting kids into the program. There is nothing Cascadia or any of the parents can do to allow more kids to get in. That is a district policy. We can't do anything about it. And number two, if the district wants to move to a neighborhood model, then they need to clearly communicate what that model is and show how that works from a quantifiable standpoint. Many parents are very skeptical of the neighborhood delivery model because they haven't seen it. We haven't seen it. I haven't seen it. And what ends up happening, unfortunately, with my fear of reading about the article from Claire Bryan, is that you have schools like Viewridge that have, what, 7 HC kids in their classroom? So it's, what, about a third of the class that they're able to differentiate? But what about other schools that really only have maybe 1 or 2 HC kids per grade? That kid is going to be socially isolated, academically isolated. And frankly, I don't know if you've seen some of these bored kids. Bored kids are disruptive. And many Cascadia families also have 2E kids, twice exceptional kids, kids who need a lot of support and learning. What happens in the cohort model is that a lot of times, because their kids are appropriately challenged, some of that problem automatically goes away. But you put those same kids in a general education classroom where they're told to go on an iPad while the teacher is teaching other kids, I really don't think that's going to work.
Jay Lay is a member of the Cascadia Elementary PTA. Jay, thank you so much for being here and for talking with me about this. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
You're listening to Soundside on KUOW. Again, we asked Seattle Public Schools to come on the show today, and we're hopeful they can join us next week to share more on how the transition to the neighborhood model will be handled and address some of the concerns Jay Lay and other parents have raised. For more on what works in gifted education, we reached out to Dr. Christina Collins, the executive director of the Robinson Center at the University of Washington. She researches highly capable programs. Collins says she is optimistic about Seattle Public Schools' new neighborhood plan, where the district says teachers will be creating individualized lesson plans to challenge students matching their abilities, all at schools in their community, so they no longer have to drive or bus across town.
You know, we're talking about trying to go away from these static labels into a dynamic learning environment. So a static label says that this kid has been labeled this thing, or whether that's highly capable, or whether that's a learning disability, or whatever it is. And now we're saying that we're not going to just say that we're going to focus on this label, but we're going to focus on the classroom environment itself. Because what we do know, there are also students that are not labeled, right? There are students that we miss. There are students that fall in the cracks on either side of that spectrum.
Collins says that because of limited resources, too often schools take a one-size-fits-all binary approach. you're this or you're that, highly capable or not. Individualized learning, she says, could mean more students are doing work that is appropriate for them. She also wants to see a continued shift to a more nuanced approach in assessing student capabilities, away from old models where culturally biased questions about things like golf created an extra barrier for some students to have to overcome. She says patience and also greater support for teachers is essential for the new model to serve all kids.
What do I see as necessary in terms of the success? Number one, patience. This is going to be a process that's going to evolve. Number two, resources, making sure that the teachers are trained to understand how does this work in the classroom. And if you think about it, we're talking about what is it that the teachers have to do with these multiple intelligence and multiple abilities in a single classroom. You have that in a classroom already.
Seattle Public Schools is currently in the process of sunsetting the highly capable cohort system and will fully shift to the neighborhood model in the 2027-28 school year. Thanks for listening to Soundside. This show is only possible because listeners support us. If you're able to give right now, please check out the show notes for a link to donate. And don't forget, you can listen live on KUOW 94.9 FM Seattle at noon and 8 p.m. Monday through Thursday, or anytime online at KUOW.org.
Seattle in the 90s. A tidal wave of iconic music roars out of this sleepy city and launches a pop culture revolution. Here's a story you haven't heard. Let the Kids Dance is a new podcast about the rise and fall of Seattle's teen dance ordinance, the law that made it illegal for young people to go to concerts. A story of moral panic, grassroots activism, and an unstoppable music community that fought for its freedom. Listen to Let the Kids Dance from KUOW and the NPR Network.